And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 94. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, and it is hot and it's sticky. Typical Chicago summer weather, and this having just passed the Independence Day weekend this weekend, it was hot, and in some ways quite pleasant, but in other ways not quite so pleasant. It's right now, to me, really good time to be here in front of the fan and not having to go outside in this horrible heat and humidity. It reminds me a lot of Florida, and that is the kind of weather that I came here to get away from. But overall, it has been pretty nice out, I guess. It hasn't been too incredibly hot, though we have had temperatures in the 80s and 90s over this past weekend. So this is a hard show for me to do. And I kind of explained a little bit on the live show and also on Facebook a little bit about what's been going on here recently. And this show is a tribute of sorts to my good friend Michael Griffin, who passed away last weekend. Now, I received news of Michael's death as I was editing Tom Harris USA episode number 93. Apparently passed away over the weekend at the end of June. And his body was found on Tuesday when people became alarmed that they hadn't heard from him. And it's been a very sad week, I have to say, because Michael was a very good friend of mine. We hadn't spoken much in recent years, but that was because I had moved away and had not been near. And it was at the urging of our mutual friend Guy that I'd actually gotten back in touch with him at the end of April, beginning of May and thereabouts, and had reconnected with Michael, and since then had been talking with him on a fairly regular basis over the phone. And his death was an unexpected surprise. I wouldn't say a shock, as his health problems have become much worse in recent years. And I don't want it to be so much of a downer, talking about Michael, because the one thing that I associate most with Michael Alton Griffin is his ability to make me laugh, and sometimes his ability to make me think. He was highly influential on me. He was passionate about cinema and about music and about literature. And he had some very, very interesting takes on things, and he had some very, very interesting tastes in things that I didn't necessarily share. For example, his taste for horror movies, I didn't really ever really get. But it was part of that macabre side of life that Michael really embraced. And he had a very quirky sense of humor about things like death that make me think that, no matter what the situation he found himself in, he could always look at himself and accept what was going on and think about the possibilities, maybe not so much worry about the possibilities. I don't think he was afraid to die. I think he was more worried about what other people would have to go through after he died. I've heard from other people that, he was to some extent a person of faith. He believed in an afterlife and hoped for the best in the afterlife and to be reunited with his parents, who he is very close to, and who he was a primary caregiver for all the way to the end of their lives. And I know that he has had a sad last few years, losing his mother, his good friend Danny, and on top of all that, his own physical failings. And most notable of that was a bad case of keratoconus, which is an eye disorder. It affects the cornea of the eye and the various other health issues that he had going on. But I don't want this, again, to be a depressing show, because this is really a show to celebrate Michael's life and some of Michael's work. Now, I got to know Michael about 1984 through various people who were involved in the peace rallies that I organized. And he actually performed at one of them. I believe it was the Peace in 85 concert, where he performed with his band Schmutzig Music, because Michael was not, I would say, a professional musician, but certainly an enthusiastic practitioner of composing music of various sorts. And I'm going to play some of his music in the show. I had talked with him recently, relatively recently, about a month ago about this, and I had been talking about how he had sent me a couple of CDs of his recent work and how much I really, really enjoyed them, and told him that I would be featuring his music in an episode of Tom Harris USA. At the time, of course, not realizing that it would be posthumous. So this episode, there are going to be a few things here. I'm going to be playing some of Michael's music. It won't be to everybody's taste, but that was Michael. You know, he wasn't to everybody's taste, and he was very much a what you see is what you get kind of person. So we're going to hear some of Michael's music, and we're also going to hear some of the stories that he and I wrote together. Now, the way we did these stories was what we generally refer to in my circle of friends as a toasty story. It's a form of word salad where you have each participant in the story will give a word. The next person will give the next word, and it'll go back to the first person and so on. And you can write these with any number of people. But my favorite toasty stories were the ones that were written by myself and Michael alone, just the two of us. Because I think that they stood up better as narrative. They weren't as random. And as I was saying earlier in the show, we exploded with gales of laughter while we were writing these stories. They're so much fun to write and so much fun just to have that time together and have each other's company. Michael was a dear, dear friend and a very good person, and I'm going to miss him very much. So to those of you who, like me, loved Michael, this show is dedicated to you, and I will be henceforth be paying tribute to Michael Alton Griffin. First off, we're going to have a piece of music here. This is from his 2008 album, Lost Souls. That was track number 3 of the Michael Alton Griffin Lost Souls project from 2008. Now, what is abundantly clear on that track is that this was entirely recorded using only his voice. Michael didn't have musical instruments. He didn't have synthesizers. He didn't have any of that stuff. He would record these tracks, and this is extraordinary. He would record these tracks using only his voice, perhaps a coffee can or a cardboard box, Windows Sound Recorder, which is a program that only records up to 60 seconds of audio, and he would process these sounds and alter them. But these are very uninvolved compositions in general, and some of his stuff is bordering on, you know, harsh electronic noise. Some of the things are a little bit more melodic, such as the track I just played. I'm going to play another track here, and this is going to be slightly more involved. And this is another track off of Lost Souls. This story is called The Shape. When the police arrived at the cemetery, they noticed a large, very irregular, and slightly warped shape. They presumed that it was dead since they found it in the graveyard. After examining it, they took turns talking to the shape to ascertain whether it would reply to questioning. Since their interrogation was lengthy, the shape got bigger. The police shuddered with delight and craved additional donuts, so they sent out one of their men to purchase donuts at 7-Eleven. 1 hour later, he returned. "Where's the shape? It was there, and now it's not. Are you trying to make the cemetery empty?" Nobody spoke. They looked hungrily at the empty grave and said to Officer Bob, "Where's the donuts? We crave sugar. Give us them, or not one of your tires will remain intact. We'll deflate them for your insubordination." Sheepishly, Officer Bob handed the empty box of donuts to Sergeant Gumby, who proceeded to shoot Officer Bob. Everyone cheered. Sergeant Gumby and his faithful entourage started to search the body for donuts. They found none. They were very distraught, and they began to search each crypt and grave, but the donuts were nowhere to be found. Sergeant Gumby howled at the moon because he needed to find his share. The shape was back. Everybody gasped. The shape had donuts hanging from his irregularly shaped form. Sergeant Gumby said, "Give me my donuts, or I'll shoot your tires, you horrid thing." The shape exploded and killed everyone. It was hungry. It ate the donuts. And if you made it to the end of that track, you're doing quite well here. That was track number 7 from Michael's album, In the Days of Beauty. And Michael described this album to me in the last conversation that we had as being the favorite of the albums that he's done recently. He was very excited about this new work and the experimentation that he was doing in it. And this is an album that is about his younger days. And I'm sure that to each of these tracks, there's a story that's being told here. And at least in his own mind, he was telling a story. Unfortunately, I don't have any of those notes. When Michael sent me these CDs, we, of course, had no idea that we were going to lose him soon. And some people may find Michael's music to be sometimes harsh and abrasive, but sometimes life is harsh and abrasive. And if there's one thing that I can say about Michael's work is that it comes from a very honest place. And, you know, it's interesting because I never had much of an interest in industrial music or electronic noise or any of this sort of thing before being influenced, I think, by several people, but mostly by Michael himself, who provided me with a lot of audio tapes. I have a ton of audio tapes that Michael made for me over the years. Not of his own work, but of other stuff that he was listening to. Stuff like Merzbow, Hana Tarash, you know, some of the Japanese noise artists, you know, Aunt Zen, the various bands on that label. A lot of this very experimental electronic music. And I was fascinated by this stuff. Now, I kind of veered off in a little bit of a different direction. I don't like, you know, Splendor Geometrico, which was one of Michael's favorite bands. But I got into a lot of the ambient stuff, and some of his later stuff echoes that. Things like Schloss Tegal or Skrull. And these are bands that I'm into. And, you know, I often would refer to Michael under the sobriquet of the master of musical enlightenment, just because he did have such a great influence on the music that I was listening to. Especially during the time I was living in Florida. After I left Florida, I kind of went off in my own direction. But it wasn't just music either. I mean, it was things like literature. You know, he was the one who first introduced me properly to the work of William S. Burroughs, who was one of my favorite authors. And he was very interested in literature, and he was telling me in our last few conversations that we had over the phone, and we'd have these marathon phone conversations of an hour or two, you know, even right up into the end, where he would tell me about the various audiobooks he was listening to. He wasn't able to see well enough to read anymore, but he would get audiobooks from the Florida, I think it was the Department for Blind Services in Florida. And he would tell me all about what he was listening to. And maintained this curiosity and this passion for literature right up to the very end of his life. And, you know, I have to say, you know, I'm going to miss him in part because of his insight and of the recommendations that he made to me. Because I would go and listen to stuff or read stuff. And most of the time, I would really like what I was seeing. And I could see in it what he saw in it. So in a lot of ways, you know, Michael was very influential to me. And helped to make me the person I am. Can't say that about very many people. All right, so to close out, I'm going to read one last toasty story here. This was the very first story that Michael and I wrote together, and I think that's absolutely hilarious. And it's a little bizarre, but of course most of these toasty stories are. The name of the story is Starstruck. On Golden Pond was my favorite film because of Jane Fonda and her amazing hairdo. It made Katharine Hepburn look like spam. She was angry at Jane because of her extreme hair. Henry Fonda smiled and vomited at Katharine because Jane asked him to. I loved the film more than eating tuna at the dentist's office. My other favorite film is Starstruck, starring no one except me. I'm not jealous of myself because I am great. Jane Fonda thinks that I am gorgeous, and she wants to star in a dirty film with me. Ted Turner would colorize his grandmother if he could. Jane hates Ted Turner and told Rona Barrett that he smells like tuna casserole. Jane Fonda's latest film is about me. Jane and I are cast as two lovable ice cream salesmen from Istanbul. Also starring in the film are Emilio Estevez, Corey Haim, Martha Ray, and lastly, as the Beaver. Roger Ebert will love this film because he is being very well-versed in the art of watching movies. Ingmar Bergman directed many of my films, but Alfred Hitchcock didn't direct anything with me or Jane. I gained 10 tons while making this picture because Jane and I ate lots of ice cream with each take. We're very fat. Ted Turner will colorize the final cut before we even see it. Arg! Lassie barked at Corey Haim, Emilio Estevez, and Martha Ray continually throughout the film. We expect to receive much applause from dog lovers and ice cream salesmen. Jane plans to write a sequel about diet ice cream for dogs. Jane's addiction to chocolate has grown into an enormous obsession. Many years went by during the making of this film. It is a masterpiece, and I have every reason to think that I am the greatest actor in the universe. Sir John Gielgud said he would never perform again because he thinks I am God. And besides, I've gotten many telegrams from deities requesting my services as a spokesperson for them. The Academy of Film praised the film because it starred me. Our bank has gotten big because we keep all of our money there, and they keep begging for more. No human has as much talent as me and Jane. We are immortal, and we will continue to make many films for all eternity. All right, so thank you, folks, very much for bearing with me on this show. I know this is a very personal sort of show, and not normally the type of stuff I do. A lot of the stuff that I tend to do on the program is of more general interest. But being as it is, I felt it only appropriate to give credit where credit is due and do this little tribute to a very good friend of mine. And, you know, it's been a long time since I've lost a friend, and especially not one of my inner circle, the people who I feel really have been very close to me and have been highly influential on me. So I do thank you all for listening. As always, the email address for the show, if you want to comment, is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I don't imagine most people will want to comment on this show, but in case you do, of course, please feel free to do so. Hello to everybody out there who might be listening for the first time because of this tribute, and I want to give special shout-outs, of course, to Lon, and to Dave Griffin, Michael's brother, and to Dee Dee Taylor, Tite Baquero, and their children, and all of the people who, you know, I knew in Florida, and I still miss today. You know, we're kind of spread out all over the world now. Some of us are in France, some of us are in the U.S., some of us are in various parts of the country. We don't really talk much anymore, and it's something that I definitely do miss. Anyway, you can also listen to my live show if you like. The live show is on Saturdays at 4 p.m. UK time, which is 10 a.m. here in Chicago or 11 a.m. over on the East Coast. And you can listen to the live program over at unitedkingdomradio.co.uk, and you can Skype into the show using the Skype address, which is United Kingdom Radio. Anyhow, thanks for listening. This is Tom in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, signing off. We'll see you next time.